This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. It is February the 22nd. It is 4:09. After 134 days in the red zone of Quebec's color-coded restrictions, Gatineau is moving into the orange zone today, easing restrictions on several businesses. So the Quebec government is moving Gatineau and the Outaouais to level 3, which is the alert zone. That means Gatineau and the Outaouais are in orange zone status. Now, when I say orange, you're thinking, we're in orange too. Buddy, buddy, same thing. Not exactly. We're both in orange, but our friends across the river are still under tighter restrictions than us. Things are a little bit different. Let me give you a quick rundown. For example, they still have to be home at 9:30 at night. There's an overnight curfew that is still in effect between 9:30 and 5 a.m. In Ottawa, you are permitted to see 10 people inside your home and 25 people outside. In Gatineau, visitors from other addresses are prohibited. You can have up to 50 people at a restaurant here, distanced, max of 4 people per table. In Gatineau, only 2 per table, and only customers with proof of residence in the same area or the same region as the restaurant are admitted. Joining us once again on the show, Gatineau City Councillor Mike Duggan is on the line. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Cat.
How are you feeling about life in the orange zone?
Well, hey, orange zone. It's a lighter shade of red. We still have a lot of restrictions, but I guess the fact that it's not red should make us a bit happier.
What parts of this are you excited about?
Restaurants.
What about restaurants?
My wife took me out to lunch today. We went to a restaurant. We could actually go into the facility, get some food, sit down, maximum 2 adults per table, and enjoy lunch together. So that's probably the big change, aside from the curfew extension at 9:30.
What about the burden putting on the restaurant, telling them you've got to ID people, make sure that customers that are coming in are in the same region? Does that make sense to you?
I personally don't like it, but I have to respect and uphold the law. It's all decided in Quebec City by the provincial authorities. Here at the municipal level, we just have to do as we're told. So we keep a brave face and we'll get through this together. But yeah, I don't like it. I think it's excessive. There are a lot of things that the restaurateurs have to do. Some of them are not going to open their dining rooms because they can't really do as good a business. They got to hire a bunch of staff to run the dining room, and they'd rather just continue with takeout and delivery.
Mm-hmm. We actually had a restaurant owner on our show who owns Amazonas, and he said takeout's actually been going really well. People have been so supportive. And for them, he said it just doesn't make sense. They can barely run the restaurant with that few people, yeah, let alone also ID people and try and figure out where they're coming from.
That's right. Amazon is a great restaurant. Nice little family place.
What about fitness facilities and gyms? They can open, but yeah, only for training activities carried out by people that all live in the same house or for private classes.
Well, I don't know all the details of the training facilities, but the gyms are open. And of course, those who run them, they've got to, you know, go through the motions of following the rules. But it's sometimes there are things that they can be extra severe or a bit flexible depending on the situation. So we leave to the judgment of those business operators, and I'm sure that they're ready in case any provincial inspectors come by to make sure they conform.
Okay. So how about the curfew? You mentioned that off the top, yeah, the fact that the curfew is still in effect. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I think it's silly to have a curfew, but when they do these analyses of these communities and they see what the numbers are like and the infection rate, so they've got to do something to show that we're moving forward. So they do these things, different cities treat it differently. And in our case, the curfew is 9:30. If the numbers get better, they'll probably release it. If they get worse, they'll punish us by making it 8 o'clock again. But let's see how it goes. I think it's silly. But
what are you hearing from constituents? How are they feeling about it?
Well, you know, most people don't go out after 8 o'clock anyway. So an 8 o'clock curfew, 9:30 curfew, some people are all for it because they're not really affected by it. But those who have different kinds of lifestyles or working schedules or are youth who want to go see some friends, it's pretty restrictive. Nobody has any proof that it actually works, but it's a measure to kind of enforce this, to have less exposure to other humans. So who knows?
Do you think it's effective?
I personally don't think it's effective. And it's too hard to really get numbers to show whether it is or isn't. So when there's a kind of a, like every city has its own mishmash of measures, and then we apply them and we hope the numbers go down. So we don't really know what specifically which measures work. We kind of imagine they do. There's a lot of improvisation, I just hope that if we ever have this kind of thing again, the civic authorities have some kind of consistency. For example, Gatineau and Ottawa have the same measures, which would make sense. I mean, if it's science-based and we're all human beings who get infected the same, why wouldn't they be the same measures everywhere?
Well, let's talk about that. Do you think that some people from Gatineau are coming over in Ottawa to use our amenities here? Like going to a gym that doesn't have the same restrictions, going to a restaurant that they can actually sit at a table of four at?
Yeah, and we have ski hills here. We have the national capital, the huge Gatineau Park. So yeah, there's some crossing over, sure.
Is that problematic in your view?
Well, I'm more on the liberty side as opposed to the, you know, the paranoia risk side. So I think it's okay. But just keep in mind that, you know, when you're talking, you know, don't speak into people. Like, respect the social distancing, have a mask at the ready. Some people are more squeamish than others. Respect their personal space, as we should anyways, and we'll get through it. But yeah, social distancing is the most important thing. And when you're in an interior space, you've got to wear those masks. But outdoors, you know, they know that this kind of stuff, it floats in the air. But when you're outdoors, it gets dispersed very quickly. The risks are minimal outdoors. So the restrictions outdoors should be a lot looser. Indoors, so however, like in a movie theater, it's got to be strict.
So if people are coming across the bridges, Counselor, and you know, this is basically like one big region. So we know that people do that every day. But if they're doing it for, let's say, a restaurant or a gym, in your view, you're accepting of that.
I'm accepting of that, as long as they respect the rules in place at the restaurant and in the city that they're in.
I wonder about these businesses, like, you know, the gyms and the restaurants and the non-essentials. How long that they can sustain themselves working under the current conditions right now? What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's getting pretty bad. And there are restaurants that, you mentioned Amazonas, there are a lot of them in that state. And only allowing two adults per table, I mean, it's something for like breakfast and lunches, but you got your dinner, you know, your bar tabs in the evening, that's going to be really affected and continue to be affected. So I just hope we don't hear more bad news of places going under, but they're just struggling to survive right now. And the community is rallying. People have their own systems, you know, family treat on Fridays where they'll go to get some pickup at a fancy place. So, but they're scraping by, which they are usually in the winter anyway. But let's hope that things open up as spring comes. They want to survive to the warm season when there's more receipts. Let's hope we get there and these businesses can survive and thrive.
Premier Ford in Ontario has warned about the possibility of another shutdown. Of course, he doesn't want it, but he's acknowledged that that's out there. It's a looming threat. So has your premier in Quebec, François Legault. How personally concerned are you about that?
Well, I kind of feel for them because when they get these this number of active cases, and if they see the numbers going up, they're kind of obliged to do something more. And so you kind of understand that. And it's not just because they're politicians and they got to worry about electoral cycles. They're civic governance. They've got to make sure that people are healthy and that if there's something that they can do, that they do it, in respect of other factors too, like the economic and social damage. So I can't, you know, it's kind of hard to point the finger at them. Like, we don't know what's going on. It's been a year of this. Hopefully we've learned and that the restrictions they apply are meaningful. But I kind of feel for those guys.
If you could bend the premier's ear, you know, let's say right now, and you were talking about the differences between Ottawa and the Outaouais, Ottawa and Gatineau, what would you say to the premier about that?
Well, I'd say consider Western Quebec as a separate zone and let us synchronize with what's going on in Ottawa. I personally don't think it makes sense to have them different. I mean, they are two different provinces. These are the two largest urban centers that are right next to each other on a provincial border. But that's being given no consideration so far, and I think it should. There's been talk even of having a national capital region, which actually has a governance structure where we would combine certain civic approaches, like in transportation and other things. So along that lines, let's, you know, synchronize what happens in Gatineau and Ottawa.
Councillor, great to have you back on the show. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
Gatineau City Councillor for the Duchesne District in the Aylmer sector. That is Councillor Mike Duggan. 418, you're listening to News Talk 580 CFRA. Very interesting to hear him say, let's synchronize. It doesn't make sense that we've got these two cities on the other side of the river and the restrictions are tighter there and they're different here. You let me know how you feel about that. Ottawa now at CFRA.com.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. CFRA.
4:23. So I've been working from home for almost a year now. Almost a year coming up in March. But today is the first time that I've been working alone because Drake went off to his new job today. He's actually working at an office now. So he's gone downtown and I'm all alone at the Carlingwood studio. I've got the two dogs here, but I'm all alone. Kind of a strange experience, Chris. Very quiet, except for the occasional bark. I don't know how I feel about it. It's weird because it's not like we were talking to each other all day before. But, you know, every couple hours, I'd run upstairs to get a glass of water. He'd come into the living room. We'd chat a little bit, kind of like passing a colleague in the hallway. And now that's gone. So I feel very much alone. And here I am in the basement. I'm starting to think maybe I should take my laptop and the radio board and just take over the main floor. Make it my huge radio studio. Maybe I'll do that. Surprise, honey. I changed the entire house while you were gone. I hope you like it. It is 4:24. A mandatory 3-day hotel quarantine for most Canadians flying back to the country has gotten off to a rocky start for some of them. Travelers are complaining of long waits on a government phone line. Deb Robinson is in Florida visiting her sick 88-year-old mother, and she's supposed to return to Toronto on Thursday. But she says she hasn't been able to book a hotel despite hours of waiting on hold.
They told us what we were going to have to do if we came back after this date. And I knew what I was getting into, and I made the cost-benefit analysis to do this. But now they're not keeping up to their end of the bargain. So I feel very frustrated.
So she said she's feeling very stuck. She says her mother has received her second dose of the vaccine for COVID-19, and she feels fortunate that she was able to see her for what may be the last time. But now what? Now she's stuck in this situation. Some travelers, of course, do not want to pay for the hotel, and they were rushing back ahead of today to try and avoid the new regulations that are beginning. People coming into one of the 4 airports that can actually accept flights last night were not so happy. Here's what it was like.
Someone like me, I'm traveling for work, so I shouldn't have to deal with that.
It's just a lot of money for me personally, and I know that a lot of people don't have that kind of money.
Nonsense. We don't accept that. That's why we are here now.
Given the new changes, I changed my flight one day earlier to be able to avoid the mandatory hotel quarantine.
So the hotels have to transport people from the airport to the hotel, then provide food, security, infection prevention and control. Martin Firestone is the president of Travel Secure Inc., and he's been hearing from a lot of travelers who really don't want to pay up to $2,000. And he acknowledges that the added cost is a bit high.
Just as a rule of thumb, it's about $350 a night for a single and $500 for double occupancy. So in other words, it is not even close to the potential $4,000 that a couple was looking at.
Now, here's the thing about that. I have a lot of empathy and sympathy for somebody like Deb Robinson, who's going to visit her sick mother. Her mother's 88 years old. This could be the last time. I understand. Graham actually had somebody on CTV who went down to go visit their parent. Their parent passed away. And then they were stuck at the border trying to get back in, trying to get the test. I have a ton of empathy and understanding for that. However, and I've said it, I know I'm going to get angry emails, and that's fine. You can disagree with me. For people that are going down, and yes, I know people go down every year and they own a property, this was not a surprise. We knew that more restrictions were coming. It was your choice to go down. You exercised it. That is your constitutional right. Good for you. Have at her. But the thing is, it was no surprise that there were more regulations that were going to come in. The Prime Minister kept saying, more is coming, more is coming, more is coming. And here we are. So, I mean, yes, it's unpleasant. That's the point. Yes, it's financially really aggravating. That's the point. They're designing it that way. It's supposed to be a deterrent. Sorry, folks, but they warned you this was coming and now it's here. And again, I just want to stress, I am not saying that to people who are going down to say goodbye to a loved one or to take care of a sick family member. Different situation. 4:28, there are 2 vaccine developers in Canada who say a lack of federal funding early in the pandemic kept homegrown vaccines from moving as quickly as international versions. John Lewis is the CEO of Entos Pharmaceuticals in Alberta, and he says his company is one of six that received about $5 million to move their COVID-19 vaccination along. But he told the Commons Committee other countries invested more than $300 million per company just to ensure that they had the funding to get through the entire vaccine development process.
Most importantly, it allowed these companies to move quickly and boldly without financial risk. And this is a key difference between these efforts and Canada's domestic vaccine response.
But Procurement Minister Anita Anand says Canada's vaccination program is taking on considerable speed, and she says it is on track.
I'm happy to announce to this House of Commons today that we will be receiving 500,000 plus vaccines in this country just this week alone, Mr. Speaker. We are on a very steep ramp up.
It is 4:29 and we are ramping up to our political heat panel. It is Monday, which means Cam Holstrom, Kate Harrison, and Lindsay Maskell are standing by. We're serving it up spicy. I hope you like it that way because it's coming up on the other side of the news. Keep it locked right here. It's Ottawa Now.
Listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Yes, pour 266, 266. Nays, count, zero, aucun.
I declare the motion as amended carried.
The House of Commons has passed a motion calling China's treatment of the Uyghurs a genocide and calling on the IOC to move the 2022 Beijing Games. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. It is 4:38. This motion is basically condemning China's treatment of its Uyghur Muslims. The Foreign Affairs Minister abstained. The Prime Minister and the rest of Cabinet did not vote. Foreign Affairs Minister Mark Garneau was the only Cabinet Minister to show up for the vote. He abstained as well.
Mr. Speaker, I abstain on behalf of the Government of Canada.
Mr. Garneau, abstention, abstention.
Mr. Hardy.
The government is getting a lot of heat on this. People asking, how is this leadership? Why would this happen? Why would the cabinet not step up and call this a genocide? Let's talk about this with our political heat panel. Here they are.
Now, political heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
And I can tell it's going to be a spicy one today. Kate Harrison is here, Vice Chair of Summa Strategies. Cam Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Strategy Group. And Lindsay Maskell, political consultant and former advisor to Premier McGuinty. Thank you all for coming on the show.
Hi, Christy.
Hello, hey, hello. Christy.
Good to get you on. All right, so Kate, I'm going to start with you. Your impression of what's just happened.
It's cowardice in its finest form. You know, the government abstaining, they might as well have voted against. I think that there's increasing pressure from the international community to stand up and call this what it is. And the government frequently likes to talk about the complexities of the relationship with China as a reason for not actually taking any action on China. I don't know a single country that doesn't have a complex relationship with China. It doesn't mean that you don't stand up and call something or refuse to call something a genocide when a genocide is happening. So I think that the government, even though this motion is done, is probably going to continue to face that pressure. The U.S. Secretary of State has called it a genocide. House of Commons Parliamentary Committee has called it a genocide. Now the majority of MPs have labeled it as such. So hopefully that pressure continues and doesn't end with today's motion, because what's happening is really quite atrocious. And the government can't keep turning a blind eye to it and making excuses for not calling it what it is.
Lindsay.
So it's interesting because I like to say, for as complex as the relationship is, there's a really simple way to look at it, and one only needs to go into the dollar store to understand the importance of our trade relationship with China. But here's the thing.
it doesn't get impacted the way people think it would by clearly saying what this is and identifying in other jurisdictions are doing this. The other thing is you can't really have it both ways. You can't have, in the quick few minutes before we came online, a quick scan of social media would show you the 30 to 40 liberal MPs that I'm following as all having made a very clear post about how they voted. So if you're monitoring us from China, they will see support from government members and everybody but cabinet. And so you really can't have it both ways. That's like sent a message without sending a message. So what did they really achieve by this tactic? It's not really clear. It also is, it doesn't make a lot of sense from an international approach when everything is headed in this direction. But knowing that you can have a position against a trading partner, that you don't like the way they operate doing something in particular, and still have a trade relationship because, in this case, that China does need us as a valuable market, as they need the States, as they need other partners in the UN who have spoken out and called this what it is. So I really don't understand the approach today, and I think it's I think that we won't look back at this in the best light.
I was reading an account earlier today from a woman who had survived a camp in China who was calling on the federal government to classify this and recognize this as genocide perpetrated by the Chinese government. She was talking about her own experience when she was there, and she said that she was forcibly sterilized and that she was treated as subhuman. So I just want people to understand what it is that we are talking about here. Cameron, what is your impression?
Yeah, Lindsay kind of took part of the words out of my mouth there, because I understand why a government sometimes, or a party at sometimes in a difficult vote, might abstain. I understand why you might do it. But the point is that in this case, it got them nothing and just brought the worst of everything on them. Because let's face it, and Lindsay's right, China's watching this, and it's not like they're taking that abstention as, oh, geez, they're shooting this down, taking our side. No, they're not. And at the same time, the people at home are watching and like, why aren't you speaking up? Because again, it's not like I could respect the government's position if they actually took a position. By not taking a position, you're kind of giving the middle finger to both sides. And let's face it, if China is going to act in a way that takes retaliation against us, they're going to do it anyway. I think we've seen that more or less now. They had a diplomatic fit against us just a couple months ago over a Wu-Tang Clan t-shirt or sweater. And I have all rap fans know that the Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to bleep with, but obviously China thinks that was enough. I'm glad I put that in there, by the way. I'm proud of myself. But seriously, if something that small is going to set them off, there's nothing you could do here that wasn't going to set them off short of complete obedience. And that's the thing we can't do. Because one thing I'll add to this is that we're coming to the situation where, whether we're trading relationship or not, Canada and China are two very different two very different nations with two very different sets of principles. And when you get into a clash like this, where these very basic principles of our nations collide, there is no third way. As much as I like to try to find middle ground, there isn't any to be had. And frankly, it's like standing with your feet in two boats. Well, as they float away, you're either going to be split in half or you're going to end up in the water, right? And in this one, Justin Trudeau and the red team got a little wet.
All right, it is 4:45. I want to move on to something that came to light actually on Friday evening, but people have been talking about it all weekend long. I'm going to play a clip here of Cheryl Gallant, who is in hot water for some pretty alarming comments. The MP accused the Liberals of some pretty shocking things during a Zoom meeting with a university student group, according to a recording of the call that was released on Friday. Take a listen.
It wasn't like the people when Kretchen was there, or even Paul Martin or Iggy or Dion. Like, they had some people with some common sense, and they've still got a handful, but they're few and far between. It's like all or nothing people, like people who were never, ever going to be happy with the legalization of marijuana. They want all illicit drugs to be legal. They want anything goes in every aspect of life. They want to normalize sexual activity with children.
accusing the Liberals of wanting to normalize sexual activity with kids. And these video recordings were posted online, accusing the Liberals of being radicals and on and on. You heard part of that clip there. Kate, first reaction to you?
Yeah, I have no idea what she's talking about.
Sexual activity with children.
Yeah, we're talking about an MP that has a history of putting their foot in their mouth, for lack of a better word. I think that if you're going to talk about something as serious as that, you should be very careful and thoughtful with your language. And just based on that clip that you just played, that is clearly not what happened. I do think it's absolutely fair to criticize the nature of those comments. Where I did see some Liberals go with this was around peddling conspiracy theories related to the Great Reset. I think a couple things can be true at the same time. I think that, you know, Cheryl Gallant should be called out for, you know, kind of the thoughtless comments related to the sexualizing activity with children. But there are also legitimate concerns around the type of economic recovery that Canada needs. I think that some of what she was talking about in her comments touched on that. To me, trying to blur those lines won't really accomplish much from the Liberal side of things. So, you know, there's no defense of what Gallant is saying there, but this idea that it amounts to some kind of big conspiracy theory that all conservatives are trying to push is also not true from the Liberal perspective.
Lindsay.
So I agree to the extent that if you know, we need to see how she is punished. The conspiracy theory piece only gives way if there's no punishment to her for having made these comments, right? You can only expand the scope of people agreeing with her if people say nothing about the fact that what she said was completely inappropriate and irresponsible. And, you know, it's interesting because I can't believe in the world of Zoom when you know that you can see the record button. You know, she's been a longtime member, and yes, people make mistakes, but, you know, she knows that words are important, and it clearly went with her long train of misinformation to say that anybody supports legalization of marijuana supports all illicit drugs. It was so wildly inappropriate, and, you know, we've seen cases in the States where people took more action for members of their party who spoke in such ways and supported such wild conspiracy theories.
Cameron.
You know what? I'm sorry. I can't look at the story without looking at the context in which it happened. And that is the world we live in now. You know, just talking about trying to normalize sexual behavior with children, that's just not a throwaway comment. That is a part of conspiracy theories. That's QAnon. That's straight out of Q, folks. And we saw what happened in Washington where that stuff led. And we've seen people acting on that kind of stuff here. So either she's bought into something and she knows no better, or she knows the difference and she's trying to exploit it. And personally, I think it's more the fact that she knows it's not true, but she exploits it because her track record shows that. And honestly, what bothers me most about this, other than just how incendiary it is and offensive it is, but she said this to a campus club. What is it with the conservative party these days and these things happening with campus clubs? And these are supposed to be the next generation, the next young leaders. Do you think you'd be going in there talking about basic principles or being good citizens or being, you know, the right way to do politics and how to put yourself out in the world, except we get this dude bro crazy stuff between this and Aaron O'Toole and his residential school comments back in the fall? This is what we're getting. It's like all of a sudden you get in front of a campus club and it's all like, okay, man, I got to fit in because, you know, I'm the uncool older person here. I got to fit in with this. And what are the kids talking about these days? Like, it's so inappropriate. And I would say that of any party, because you know what? If anything our MPs have a responsibility to do, it's ensure that our democracy is in better hands when they hand it off to the next generation. And that's where those young politicians are being bred. Frankly, those kids are some of the same kids who are going to go to work on Parliament Hill for MPs. And do we want rabid partisans who view their enemies through that lens that she just put in front of them, or do we want them to see them as fellow citizens who they might disagree with but they can work with? You know what? Like, if we're talking about the problems in our politics, that's a good example of some of the root causes, the root problems we have, and stuff like that makes it worse.
So, you know, Ted Cruz, the Texas senator, went on this very short-lived holiday to Cancun, Mexico, and people have been very ticked off about it because it was during a devastating storm, and all of the people that were living there were furious, especially the ones that had been for days without power, with these widespread power outages that had no running water for 4 days in a row. And he admitted it was a mistake, but some of his constituents weren't going to let him go that easy. Yeah, that's the sound of a mariachi band that was seen playing outside his home as outrage continues over the fact that he headed down to Cancun, Mexico. This is a little bit of political trolling here, Kate. Now, I will say, I don't like it. As funny as it is that it's a mariachi band, and I do like the injection of humor, I don't like it when people go outside the home of a politician. Yeah. I think that crosses the line.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, he is a bit of the victim of his own making here for having such colossally bad judgment.
But 100%.
I would agree, though, that, you know, we saw, you know, protests and demonstrations happen outside of Kathleen Wynne's home, and that was wrong. We've seen it happen in front of Doug Ford's home, and that's not right either. There it should be some separation there. At the same time, it continues to boggle my mind how ostensibly smart people can get into politics, play the game, but think they're not going to get burned themselves.
But think of the children, Kate, his children. Think of his poor child that just wanted to go on a vacation.
To a COVID
heartless.
Hotspot.
Heartless you are, Kate.
If you were so concerned, then, you know, don't let your 14 or 15-year-old get on the plane in the first place. But it just such a silly error in judgment, and he's going to be, I'd say, paying for it for a long time, but like this could definitely kill future political ambitions, because right or left of the spectrum, you're not really making excuses for Ted Cruz right now.
I just can't see how you all can't see what an amazing father he is, Lindsay.
I'm sticking with the original lie that he told, which I love, which is that it's because his two daughters convinced him to do this, right? So I like the idea that a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old girl made him throw out all common sense and judgment about the pandemic and the local crisis of his constituents, because they were like, no, Dad, you're taking us to Mexico. You're dropping us off. You don't get to stay with us. Thanks.
They should run for office.
They should run. Like, I thought I had a privileged childhood and upbringing. I never had that kind of control. So I enjoy sticking with his original lie because it's more fun. But it's crazy that he thought that this would fly. And, of course, everything, you know, just... Every time you tell a lie like this, there's obviously people want to check you on it. The fact that her friends were sending in the text messages of the wife planning the vacation and the travel agent showing that there were, you know, return flight was originally Sunday. I don't know why he didn't just say, I made an error in judgment, that's it, and be back on the front lines, right? He definitely made it worse for himself. But I enjoyed the blame on his children. But that is unfortunately maybe how you end up with a mariachi band in front of your house when you blame your family.
You know, it reminds me, Cam, of the MLA in Alberta who went to Hawaii, and then constituents brought leis and signs to her office. Now, I will say again, I think it should be done outside the office, not outside somebody's home. I think that crosses the line, but it reminds me of that.
It also reminds me of our own Canadian mariachi incident, which happened in the late 90s with the Alliance. It was, or the Reformers, pardon me, it was Randy White and Deb Gray out in front of the Senate. They brought in a whole mariachi band to serenade, I can't remember his name, but a liberal senator who came back for his one day a year from Mexico to ensure he kept his paycheck. It's some of the most cringy video you will ever see online, and it, to have done so today would never have flown because it wreaked white privilege when they did it, but that sticks in my mind. But I will say this, though. The one word I will not use and I will refuse to use to describe Ted Cruz in this is a victim. That guy is smug. He did this to himself. This is karma. You know what? This is somebody up above looking down on him and say, okay, buddy, that's enough. Time to smack you upside the head and give you some common sense. And the fact is that this guy has not hesitated once to poke his fingers in the eyes of whomever he feels is beneficial to him that day. And to see him do this and think he wouldn't get caught is mind-blowing. You know, most politicians say, keep my kids out of it, protect my kids, leave the family alone. He's like, no, nope, here you go, kiddos, you're going right under the bus. Like, it's an approach. I guess he thought it could have worked, but come on, it was crazy. And on top of that, the poor dog, Snowflake. Somebody think of Snowflake. Are you trying to tell me the Ritz-Carlton doesn't have pet accepting rooms? They don't have a carrier to bring them on the flight? Poor Snowflake. And honestly, the irony of the fact that Ted Cruz, this mega warrior, has a dog named Snowflake. Let's reflect on that irony for a moment.
The little pet poodle.
I have to say, these issues always make me really thankful that Dalton McGuinty's big vacations were the canoe trips in Algonquin Park with his sons. And these were not the kind of challenges that we had at the time because of just, you know, the people that you attract. But yeah, the big canoe trip was always the vacation, and it was definitely not contentious.
All right, we got to get out of here. It is 4:57, and it looks like Aaron O'Toole is speaking right now. Cam Holstrom, Kate Harrison, Lindsay Maskell, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, everyone.